Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, we'd like to thank you for tuning into the World Boxing Review Radio Show. My name is Aaron Snowell, and they call me the Hall of Fame Trainer of Champions. And on the line from live from Pottsville, Pennsylvania, our radio aficionado, Bob Murray. What's going on, Bob?
Hey, good morning, Aaron. Yeah, lots of news to talk about this week, man. It's been a busy little week. We're looking back on some of the stuff that happened and what's coming up. And yeah, but we got a sunny day here, so we're happy to see the sunshine.
The sun is shining. But we got some announcements too, Bob. Don Chargan, who is died at 90 years old. He was a great promoter. He promoted some of Muhammad Ali's fights from California. We like to wish his family our condolences, you know, from the show.
Yes.
What a credit, a Hall of Famer in his own right. He did a lot for the game of boxing. What a gentleman and a scholar he was. So we wish the best and condolences to his family. But also, Bob, Carl King, I was talking to him this morning to check up on him, and he just got out of knee surgery. And he's recovering from knee surgery. He said now he got to go through the rehab and things like that. So we want to wish Carl King a speedy recovery. Come on, Carl, going out there and get well and everything.
Yeah.
And step up to the plate now that you had the surgery and get back into the thick of things here. But, Bob, we got a lot to talk about, some major news, major announcements, major shows going on. A lot was going on, you know?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, a lot is going on. Right. And so, yeah, we just want to cover last night, too. We want to congratulate Callum Smith, knocked out George Groves last night in that super middleweight Muhammad Ali trophy final for the World Boxing Super Series. Took place in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia last night. And, you know, it brings up an interesting point, too, because Smith was supposed to fight Jorgen Bramer, who was the two-time light heavyweight champion. But Bramer hurt his shoulder and ended up fighting that Nikolai Holtzman and beat him and then Groves final. So we'd like to see this Calvin Smith, Jorgen Bramer fight come down the road pretty soon. Because we've been doing all right picking some of these shows, Aaron, you know. Doing some of these matchmaking stuff. You know, a couple months ago we talked about the we had to get the Hammer and the Shields together, too. And that's happening now. Clarissa Shields taking on Christina Hammer, the two great undefeated world champion middleweights. And they're going to fight in Atlantic City on November 17th. So that we want to pass that along, too. And while we're at it, we'll just throw some numbers out there, too, for everybody. The Canelo Triple G fight got 1.1 million pay-per-views. So that was the number there. Not great, but not bad either. And, of course, 90,000 people showed up at Wembley for the Anthony Joshua Povetkin fight. And also the Wilder Fury thing is now scheduled for Staples Center in Los Angeles December 1st. It's a done deal. We're waiting for that one to happen. Okay, there we go.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely, Bob. But, you know, I would like to first talk about the big announcement that was made by HBO executive Peter Nelson. He announced
that's the big news, yeah.
Yeah, that's really big. And for them to step out of boxing at this time, for 45 years, they have been putting on great events. But let me tell you a little something, Bob. You know, a lot of times, and people say, well, why are you all the time talking about Don King? I said, you can't deny him his right. He, along with Seth Abraham, working together, they show HBO up for boxing to where it was making all this great money and pay-per-view sales and all that. When they couldn't come to terms of agreement about Mike Tyson, that's when Don King left. Over $1 million. Don King said, give me $100 million for Mike Tyson. Don said, if you don't give me $100, Seth Abraham said, I give you $99.9 million. he wouldn't budge for the $1 million. So, you know, they sought out to destroy people and rip people apart. But Don left from there, and he built with Jay Larkin and them, Michael Fuchs and them together with Showtime to bring Showtime boxing up to where it is today with those large pay-per-views with Mike Tyson, Julio Cesar Chavez, Trinidad, Bernard Hopkins. Man, the list is long, fine, but distinguished. You know, those great events that they put on with Showtime to make Showtime strong. But we also talked about, Bob, weeks ago, is that when Anthony Joshua was looking around to find somebody to put up the money for him, you
right.
know,
right.
for overseas events. Now, here's a guy doing 90,000 seat sale. This ain't the first fight that just happened, and we'll talk about that later. Because HBO, when they put their investment money up for the amount of shows that they're going to do, they budget the money out to the promoters for each show. All right? Instead of them going and recognizing that, wow, this guy's something special with his draw, and he's going to be the special of boxing. He did the same thing with Mayweather. They didn't want to give Mayweather the money that he asked for that forced Mayweather to go elsewhere. So it's not the point that the talent didn't come to them. It's the point that they didn't want to invest at that time by the advice from somebody that really probably don't know boxing. And
that's
in
what
return,
happened too. Yeah.
Yeah. Here you have Mayweather do all of those pay-per-view sales for, you know, millions, you know, way more than Canelo Alvarez and Triple G. Triple G, I remember, with Don King, they wouldn't let Don King on HBO. If a fighter didn't do a certain number on, like, Boxing After Dark and those things, they wouldn't let him fight on HBO. On the main channel or pay-per-view unless he fought on somebody's undercard. They wouldn't let him headline. So Triple G really didn't have the numbers. Canelo Alvarez, he's the one who pushes the numbers. So in terms of a business point of view, and like not to say anything bad about Golden Boy Promotion, is that they had taken Golden Boy Promotion who really ain't made no major stars. You know, Canelo Alvarez probably maybe be the first, but when he was fighting, he was fighting himself, Bernard Hopkins, Sugar Shane Mosley, all of them fighters were already made when he got them. You know what I mean? He didn't have
to
develop them and to make them no preview superstars. You understand what I mean? So after out, now it's time to really put the promotion thing in gear to do what you have to do to make and develop stars. It didn't happen. See what I'm saying? So people are investing money when you don't – they don't get it. HBO is in business to make money. If their subscriber base don't go up, if they don't move the needle with that, with Mike Tyson, Julio Cesar Chavez, Trinidad and them, they moved the needle. The prescriber base went up. People wanted to get HBO in order to watch the fight. You know what I mean? That turns into dollars and cents. They invest money, they get a return on their investment that they make. With all of them other guys up to this point, they haven't been doing that. It's been dwindling and dwindling and dwindling down, and I guess they said they might as well count their losses now before they go under. So let's see if they get back in the game. I don't think they're all the way out of the game. I think they're just sitting back trying to make adjustments to find out where this thing's really at, Bob.
Yeah, you mentioned something you talked earlier this week. They're going more into like documentaries and old fights and things like that. A little more of a historic bent, I think, too, is where they're focusing.
Yeah, well, they're a movie channel. People tune in to watch movies. Let's see how them boxing documentaries that they plan on doing with Jim Lampley, let's see how that turns out. You know,
yeah.
You know, the drama series like that with boxing and documentaries do very well.
Yeah, so that seems to be where they're going. But, yeah, time will tell, I guess. But, that was an interesting comment there, Aaron, no doubt. Thank you. Cool.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, getting back with Anthony Joshua, what a fight, man. Over
yeah,
there.
Yeah, there we go, yeah.
Yeah, what a fight, Bob.
Yeah.
This is what we had talked about, if you remember.
Exactly,
we had,
really. You said about him coming
here.
Out early.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we talked about when two good fighters get in the ring, about everybody putting themselves on the line and fight, you know? And, there really is no loser. There's a loser, but there's no real loser because he came to fight. With Povetkin came to fight. In the first round, he had Anthony Joshua, you know, looking to find his feet up under him. You know, he got hurt.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
he got
yeah.
cut. His nose was bleeding. And then one thing about Anthony Joshua, he's one of those type of fighters. When he gets hurt or in trouble, he really fights. And that's a mark of a true champion, a great champion, when he's tested. And believe me, Povetkin tested him, but Anthony Joshua turned it up a notch, Bob.
Yeah. He did. Yeah, it was close. I mean, like you said, he was getting beat pretty good the first two rounds, really. And
mm-hmm.
then he started stretching out
third.
A little bit. Yeah, maybe even the third, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And he turned the fight around. He stepped the pace up. And I tell you what we notice is that his spirit don't get down and get seed blood or anything. And he cut Povetkin, and that's what really made him jump into that gear. He really went to work after he seen that bomb. He went to really putting it out, and he was throwing combinations, Bob. Remember that uppercut that we said against Parker that he didn't have?
Right, yeah.
You know, he worked on it, you can tell, and he found it against Povetkin. You all right, Bob?
Yeah, I'm okay.
yeah. It sounds like you got a little cold or something. You okay?
No, something's scratching my throat. I'm going to take a drink of water.
Yeah, get a little water, man. All of those, you know, we didn't go around the world yet.
I know. I got to save the voice. There we go.
But it looked like he worked on that uppercut, you know, and he found it in this fight. And that right hand that he couldn't hit Parker with, he found it against Povetkin. And it was a good fight, a good show for England. And I'm just loving it. And with this Dante Wilder and Tyson Fury fight in California, man, is it going to be exciting. But, Bob, going around the world, man, while you got your voice, let's see what happened in other things, and we'll get back to all of that.
Yeah, we have a big lineup across the world today, too. We start out today in the Far East with the battle for the vacant IBO World Super Bantamweight title fight. That's taking place in Singapore between the 11-0 with 8 knockouts, Muhammad Ridwan, and the 26-2, 11 knockouts, Paulus Ambunda. Also on that card is the IBO Oceania welterweight title clash between Kang Fahui, 9-0-1, and Abdelela Karoum, 3-0. And the WBC Asian Boxing Council Continental Light Heavyweight title fight between Muhammad Miraj, 8-2-1, and Nadawulf Mazanin, who's 7-3-1. And also a great bantamweight matchup between Michael Dasmaninas, 28-2, and Manuel Plan, 17-0. Action across the USA is highlighted by the 12-round super lightweight contest between former WBA world champion Jorge Linares, 44-4, 27 knockouts, and Abner Cotto, 23-3. 12 knockouts in Indio, California. A big night for Linares to try to get back in the winning track there, too, after losing his last time out, former champion, as he mentioned. Also, that card features two great lightweight matchups. Oscar Duarte, 14-0-1, takes on Roger Gutierrez, 19-2-1. And the 17-1 Romero Duno steps in against the 16-2-3 Ezequiel Aviles. In Bakersfield, California, their card is stopped with the Miguel Contreras, 5-0, and Mike Malikian, 4-3-1 lightweight contest. While in Montebello, It's the female light flyweight fight between Lorraine Villalobos and Monica Flores as the main event. Three vacant ABF titles are up for grabs in Rising Sun, Indiana, in a Nate Tubbs-sponsored event. Nate Tubbs on the show a few weeks back talking about this event taking place tonight. Jeff Camp, 4-2-1, and Demetrius Wilson vie for the ABF USA Mid-American Super Lightweight crown. Also, you have Charles Natal, 10-1-2, and Chuck Willis, 3-5, both seeking the ABF USA Mid-American Super Welterweight belt. And also, Bertha Arakseel, 4-0, battles Sarah Curran, 3-1, for the ABF USA Female Super Welterweight title. In Newtown, North Dakota, the night is capped with the Super Welterweight matchup of Ronaldo Cruz, 10-1, versus Brandon Maddox, 7-1-1. Duluth, Minnesota highlights the 3-0 Marlon Sims in a super featherweight feature. In Pensacola, Florida highlights the 8-0 with 6 knockouts, David Cushing versus the 2-3 Calvin Smith super lightweight class. Fort Washington, Maryland features the middleweight battle between Francisco Bustos, 8-0, and the 3-1-1 Donald Wallace. A big card at the King's Theater in Brooklyn, New York is topped with the Melissa Sangzio, 10-3-4 versus Mayra Hernandez, 6-0 female featherweight feature. Sao Paulo, Brazil will see Rose Volante. She's 13-0, 7 knockouts. She'll defend her WBO World Female Lightweight title against Yolonis Maruga Franco, who's 27-9-4. Buenos Aires, Argentina will see Pablo Manuel Ojeda, 15-4, 10 by knockout. Take on Fabian Oscar Orozco, 27-8-3 for the WBC International Super Featherweight title. While across town in Tranquilcan, it's Fabricio Miguel Reyes, 9-0-1. And Gabriel Gustavo Oviedo, 15-9, vying for the vacant South American super featherweight belt. And Laura Soledad Grifa, 16-2, she defends her South American female super bantamweight belt. And two separate venues are happening. Iztacalco in the Federal District in Mexico, super welterweight Jorge Paez Jr., 40 wins, 11 losses, 2 draws, 24 knockouts, has his big weighted rematch with Jose Carlos Paz. He's 22-7-1, 12 by knockout. That's a card that also features unbeaten featherweight Carlos Arnaiz, 21-0, 12 knockouts, stepping in against Wilmon Kananenko Rito, who's 7-1-2. And across town is Jose Ordecani Reynoso, 12-11 versus Cesar Salcedo, 8-4-1 in a bantamweight main event. And in Kuala Lumpur, there's also in the District Federale in Mexico with Adrian Pacheco Paradise, 6-2, fighting Rodrigo Hernandez in the super featherweight finale. Hermosillo and Sonora will top their night with 9-0 featherweight Brian Acosta, clashing with Eduardo Martinez. Tijuana in the Baja highlights the Marco Sustasa, 9-1-1 versus Ali Cortez, 8-0 flyweight contest. Up in Cornwall, Ontario, Canada, let's see, Albert Autoluso, 23-1-1, battling Patrice Olney, 11-0 for the vacant WBA, NABA, and the WBO, NABO middleweight titles. In Europe, plenty of action tonight, beginning in Hamburg, Germany, with Sebastian Formella, 18-0, and Ilias Isaudi, 13-0, battle for the WBO European super welterweight crown. And it's Ali Aaron Demirezin, 9-0, and Sergey Vervezko, 8-1, battling for the WBO European heavyweight belt. Waldenbrook will see Erkan 2, 12 knockouts versus Robert Hellenius, 27-2, 16 knockouts. The Nordic Nightmare lost last year to Dylan White. Big fight for him tonight to see if he can get back into that heavyweight conversation. They fight for the vacant IBF Intercontinental Heavyweight Crown. Grand Synth in France features 10-0 Raphael Tronc taking on Karine Berejem, 8-6 for the France's heavyweight title. Down the road in Neil, 6-0 light heavyweight Jabril Cook tops the card and then drop in the opposite featherweight Nahe Karachi at the top of that bill. Cervé features the female lightweight contest of Anne-Sophie DaCosta, 25-3, versus Kitty Collinpar, who is 1-3. Rome, Italy will host the heavyweight clash of Semin Levine and Giuseppe Scapoli. And Pesaro Ciano features the cruiserweight contest of Guido Marzuoli, debuting against Florian Oyenea, who is 5-56-5. The EBU European super welterweight title fight between unbeaten Sergio Garcia, 27-0, 13 knockouts, and the 27-1-1 Maxime Bolster highlights the card in Torre Vega, Spain. While super bantamweight Ortiz Pardal, 12-3-1, tops the bill at Alicante in La Mancha. Geneva, Switzerland fills the bill with Ornella Domini, 12-1 versus Marie Tutina Chavilli, 4-5-2, female featherweight fight. while in Frauenfeld, it's Fatan Vukinar, 7-0-1, versus Nicolas Gorgava, who's 11-12-2. That's the middleweight main event. Frankendorf will have 6-1 Fabian Hartman fight Borislav Donkov, 9-20-1 in the super middleweight headliner. And Catherine Holm, Sweden, hosts Simon Engstrom, 4-1, and Josef Parati, 3-1, light heavyweight tilt. Glaskova, Kosovo, will see middleweight Aldi Sora and Marcio Mariano, 7-9, duke it out. The cruiserweight contest of Rafael Simoyan versus Isaac Pa'akwisi Ankara tops the card in Moscow, Russia. Lots of action in UK tonight. In Bolton, we start there. George Brennan, 7-2-1, and Zahid Hussein, 13-0, vie for the vacant Triple BFC Central Asia featherweight title. And also we have Lee Clayton and Craig Derbyshire battling for the vacant Triple BFC Central Area bantamweight belt. Liverpool hosts the battle for the vacant BBFC Continental Area lightweight crown between Steve Bragan, 12-1-2, and Brad Bossom, 5-5-1. Stoke-on-Trent features super lightweight Kalaj Buttery and Leon Richards going at it, while Bracknell will see 9-1 Luther Clay take on Yaha Saritici, 13-3-3, in the welterweight feature there. And York Hall in London tops their big card with 10-0-1 Jed Smith, stepping in against the 10-2 Anthony Hardy in their welterweight headliner. Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, will host a battle for the vacant UBO super welterweight title between Twaha Kaduki, 12-3-1, and Sharif Kasongo, 12-2. And we'll also see Halima Bunjabe, 6-4-1, defend her UBO International Female Light Flyweight belt against Mujama Pengo. And now we can react all back around the world again to the Far East. We go to Taipei, Taiwan, with Takuya Watanabe. Takuya Watanabe is 34-8-1. And he takes on Bloom Lorca, 19-1-1. They vie for the vacant OPBF Silver Super Featherweight belt. We also have Wenxi Huang, 9-3-1, and Dao Siri Wangmuang, 3-0, both seeking the WBC Asian Boxing Council Continental Female Super Flyweight Crown. At the sports complex at the Naval Base in the Philippines, at Salatio Amit, 10-5-2, 7 knockouts, crossing the ropes to take on fellow Super Flyweight Margarito Moya, 9-6. Auckland, New Zealand, will witness Sampulu take on Conrad Lam in a heavyweight showdown. And at the ABA Stadium across town, 7-0 David Light fights 11-11-2 Hunter Sam in another heavyweight battle. Tokyo, Japan hosts the battle for the OPBF minimum weight belt between the 13-0 Tsubasa Kua and the 12-0 Daiki Tomita. And Chengdu, China will see minimum weight fighters Yang Li, 4-1, and Guang Zhang Li, 4-4-1 fight as the main event there. So let's count out 22 countries today, Aaron. That's a big trip around the world. Lots of action, like 4 different venues in Switzerland even, man. We're rocking.
We're rocking 22 countries. But let me tell you, we know our guest, Harold Weston, is holding the cue. But we'll be right with you, Harold. Just hold the cue. Yeah, 24 countries did you say?
22, yeah, 22. Counting Saudi Arabia. We talked about that. So we'll add that.
Wow. Well, we'd like to thank you for tuning in to the World Boxing Review radio show. My name is Aaron Snowell. They call me the Hall of Fame Trainer of Champions. And our radio aficionado, Bob Murray, who just took us all around the world. But our guest, he done fought all around the world. Man, when you talk about boxing, man, there's so much to describe. Our guest, Harold Weston Jr., is second to none. Welcome to the World Boxing Review radio show, the Hall of Famer, Harold Weston Jr., bro. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, man. I appreciate you having me on your show.
Yeah, man. Well, look, there's so many things that describe you, Harold. I like to thank you for coming to the show to talk about boxing and your career. You had a tremendous career. Let's go into We'll go in a kind of backwards mode. What are you doing now, Harold? In terms, and we'll go back to check the other stuff. What are you doing now?
Well, right now I'm trying to live the life of being a 60-year-old man, and at the same time staying in good health.
There you go.
That's something to do, brother. But let me tell you, you're one of the type of guys, You're always looking good and smelling sweet. You know, I ain't funny, but I can say this about my brother that I love dearly, Harold Weston. Were you talking about a gentleman's gentleman, a fighter's fighter? Describe, what is it like to be the head dog of the boxing capital of not only the United States but the world, Madison Square Garden, to run that? Well, what is it like? Describe that.
That was you know, it was a experience of a that I never dreamed of. Let me just say that, okay? And to run Madison Square Garden into helping young men to fulfill their careers in boxing and to be the best at in their division was a great opportunity of helping people. And we're talking about, you know, we're talking about guys that never had anything, had nowhere to go. A lot of them was more street guys that was pretty much wind up being, you know, doing bad things in their lives, but they turned to boxing to help them out to be a better person. And I was very blessed to have a good father and good manager like Gil Clancy, and to my father Harold Weston Sr., who have educated me and gave me a lot of knowledge in the game of boxing, to understand the sport and to understand individuals at the same time, and learning from Emil Griffin. So I had a lot of educated guys in it that didn't give me a walk in the park. I mean, I had to, you know, bust my behind, and they gave me harder, more work than they gave other fighters, you know, to make me really want to do it. But, the thing of being
Madison
at Madison Square Garden was
a
great.
Big task after a boxing career to manage, you know, to run Madison Square Garden, you know, after a great boxing career that you had, man. You fought some of the best in the game, brother.
Cuevas,
describe a Pino Cuevas, a Tommy Hearns, and somebody, when we posted up online, they messaged us and said, yeah, not only was he a great fighter, he beat Australia's great. So describe, you know, some of those fights and all it is, you fighting on that level.
Well, you know, let me just say this. That has made me, I had to really prepare for Rocky Mattioli, because that's who I fought in Australia. But before I fought Rocky Mattioli, I had just flew on down to Washington. I fought Johnny Gant. And a lot of people don't know him,
right?
But he was like number four in the world, number five. He's a good boxer. And I went down to Washington.
He lives in Atlanta now.
Yeah, does he? Oh, okay. Well, I fought him down in Washington and beat him, but they call it a draw in Washington, okay? So then Gil, we was coming on the train back home to New York, and Gil got off the train and got to the telephone. He said, give me some change. I had to call somebody. So he called somebody, and he was talking to this guy and everything. He said, yeah, he's all right, blah, blah, blah. And then he got a phone. He said, all right, you got to go down, get a passport. You're going to Australia. I said, Australia? He said, yeah, you're going to fight a guy named Rocky Mattioli in Australia in 3 weeks. And I said, okay. So I didn't know who Rocky Mattioli was. You got to understand this. I didn't know. Just Rocky Mattioli. So it was just another fight to me. And I had just fought the number three guy. I got a draw. So I know, you know, things were moving in the right direction. So when I fought Rocky Mattioli and beat him in Australia, he came to my dressing room and he said to me, he said, who the hell are you? And I said, Harold Weston. He said, no. I ain't never heard. He said, you can fight. I said, yeah.
But a lot of people found out, Harold. There was a young fighter that you fought in Madison Square Garden who everybody was touting about. I think you were around about 21 years old.
Benitez. Yeah, Benitez.
Course.
Yeah.
That's
Benitez
right.
Wasn't 21. He was 19. Yeah. Because he won.
You were 21.
No. He was 19, and I was like 20. I was 23.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
I
was
23. I know he's younger than you.
Yeah.
But
he had won the title at 17.
That's right. He's the youngest fighter to win a world title.
He won a world title, and when he won the world title, he defended one time. Then he came to New York, and then he fought me. He was like I say, 18 or 19 years old when he fought me. They weren't even going to give him a license because of his age at one time when he came to New York.
Mm-hmm.
Because of his age.
Yeah.
But he fought me, and then when I fought him, you know, everybody was there. You got to understand, we sold out Madison Square Garden that night. I mean, it was huge to even – I'm rated number two in the world in the welterweights. He's a junior welterweight champion, right? And
right.
And he's undefeated, and we're fighting each other, and we both can you know, hurt our career. But we fought our butt off and everything. I felt I beat them, but at the same time they called it a draw, and everybody called it a draw, and they were like in shock and everything. But Benitez, you know, I knew Benitez. You gotta understand this, okay? Because I had boxing when he was younger, when he used to come up to the gym with his father, with other fighters his father had come to New York, and so I knew everything about him. So it was like easy for me when I fought him. I said, yeah, I'll fight him because I had gotten better. he's gotten better, but I got better. So it was a little off for him. He couldn't handle me, and that was the whole thing about it. He couldn't figure me out. He couldn't, because he was a smart fighter. He really is a smart fighter.
Yeah.
He's a real good smart fighter. Yeah.
He could box, counterpunch, box and move. But you were putting pressure on him, boxing him that night on the dime.
Yeah,
you know,
well,
I knew what I had.
You know, you guys see him. Yeah, you got to know. I knew what I had in front of me because I had boxed him in the gym, and I knew his moves and everything. So I knew everything he was going to do before he did it himself. That was the reason why he was very frustrated in the fight and couldn't take advantage of me, because I knew everything that he knew. So it was to my advantage. And it was great. You know, I mean, you know, it was a real turnout. I mean, when you had all these guys, let me just say this, all these hustlers and stuff around there, you know, you had the Latinos and the brothers and everything else, and they betting big time, and then it comes to a draw, and they got to get back the money to each other.
Hey, Hal, let me tell you, you know, you're a fighter's fighter. When I say this, I mean this. It's because anytime you go, the Olympic Auditorium, you fought Pino Cuevas, right?
Yeah.
In the Olympic out in California. And not too many brothers would go in the Olympic Auditorium and fight Hispanic guys. But you went in there. You went in there.
Hey, Aram, I will fight you on the moon, okay? It didn't make no difference. Yeah, it came to the point. After I got this boxing down and learned how to really fight, okay, it didn't make no difference who I fought. And I told Teddy Brenner this, who was running Madison Square Garden at the time. I went to his office, and he said, Hal, what do you need? I said, let me tell you something, Teddy. Throw everybody's name in a hat, and you pick out whoever you want me to fight in the world.
Oh.
And I walked out of his office. That was when I came back. When I really got this thing down called boxing, and I started understanding it more clearly for my benefit to know how to handle it. And that was after I boxed Emil Griffin. When Emil Griffin was beating my behind every day in the gym since I was a little boy all the way until the time I came back from the military. And I really understood, you know what I'm saying, understood the technique of this game. And that's when I beat Griffin's butt in the gym. That's when I realized how this thing went. And I was ready. And nobody was going to stop me.
And not only that, man, you and Tommy Hearns on Sports World, you know, that was out in Vegas, wasn't it?
Yeah, I was in Vegas. Yeah.
The Dooms.
Yeah.
You two were fighting.
Oh, yeah, we were fighting. Yeah, we were fighting.
Y'all was putting on a show.
Yeah, we were fighting. I was going to knock Tommy butt out. I was going to knock Tommy out. Yeah, we were fighting.
Yeah,
I was going to knock him out.
Tommy said that he was winded.
He was.
He was winded in the fight. But something happened to your eye or something in the fight that caused you to not come out or something in the corner.
Yeah, well, what happened?
I had attached retina.
What happened was in my right eye, the whole right eye just got blinked. It's just like a like a cushion
spot.
Came over, just got blank, and I couldn't see out of the right eye at all. And that's the reason why. I believe me, if I had blurriness of Tommy, I would have went. I'd have went to the next round. But I couldn't see out of that right eye at all. It's like just somebody taking a patch and just putting it over your eye, right? And that was it. And all I saw was light, but I couldn't see. I couldn't see a figure or nothing. And that was the whole thing, because at the end of that round, all I was doing, Tommy was running and moving, and I had to jump, you know, turn around real fast to catch him, to see him from my left eye. And so that was the that was the thing about fighting with Tommy. But I knew Sterling, I was going to beat Tommy Hearns, because when I went down to Philadelphia, they asked me, when they was making the fight, they asked me to come down to Philly to watch him fight. He was fighting some kid from Philly at the time. And I was watching him fight. I saw about like two or three rounds. And I told my father, I said, man, make the match, man. I can beat this kid. And then that was it. But at that time, Tommy was knocking everybody out. I mean, he had knocked out Clyde Gray. He was knocking out – I mean, he was knocking out top contenders at that time. I mean, he looked brutal. He looked brutal at the first, when he first came on scene.
This is the young Tommy. This ain't the older Tommy when he moved up to middleweight. This is young Tommy. This is when he was a real pit.
Let me tell you, if he learned one thing, and what was his bad part was stamina. He didn't understand that stamina thing and knowing how to, you know how to handle it. And he was knocking everybody out so fast that I guess, you know, you ain't got to worry about stamina because everybody getting knocked out.
But when I
understood, but I knew about the stamina. I knew that when you get fatigued, I don't care who you are, you're going to get tired in the ring. If you don't understand how to deal with fatigue, you're going to be in trouble. And so I saw that in Tommy's fight.
Well,
I saw that in Tommy's fight.
Him and Emmanuel said, we learned a whole bunch in this fight. If we go anywhere, we're gonna have to be training there for a while with our stamina, because Tommy was talking about he felt it.
I was getting ready to knock his butt out. I ain't gonna lie to you, sir. I mean, God works in mysterious ways, but God worked for me. I mean, it was a reason for me to have that moment, and I had it. And you know, I left boxing, but I had other good graces, blessings come to me. But let me just say to you, right. I'm going to tell you right now, I'm putting it on the air. Ray Leonard owed me some money. Marvin Hagler owed me some money. Okay? Iron Barkley owed me some money. All right? And I'll tell you why they owe me money. These are all three guys that called me up on the phone and asked me advice about the Tommy Hearns when they were getting ready to fight him.
I'm pretty sure that they did.
I mean, they all owe me some money because after the fight was over, right? They called me up and said, thank you for giving me the advice, bro. He said, everything you said about that man came true. He said, man, I'm glad I was ready for it. He said, because if I didn't do it, I'd have got knocked out. I said, you're right. I said, because that's how vicious he was.
he was vicious. Well, you know, Harold, let's move it up into this day and this time, man. You know, I spent a lot of time with you in training camps and stuff, you know, helping develop young talent and things. What do you see in these young fighters? What is your view? What do you feel is the problem?
The problem, and you want to be honest, and this is scary about the whole thing, there's no teachers. If you don't have no teachers, you have no fighter. You have no teachers in school. You have no kids growing up to be smart. So there's the problem is not being educated. You don't have the teachers. You just have guys out there just fronting to say they're trainers, but they're not qualified trainers. They're not the custom models. They're not the Gil Clancy. They're not the Angelo Dundee. They're not the Freddie. You know.
Ray Arcel,
you know, right? Eddie Fletcher, right? They're not an Aaron Snowell. I mean, they're not those kind of guys. Okay, see, I seen you at action, and I was very impressed with you when I got there and saw you really work and seeing how you work with guys. So I put you in that category with those kind of guys, and I'm very critical about giving anybody any stars when they don't earn it. You know what I'm saying? So when I name a person, believe me, I respect them because I know they stuff and they know what they're doing. Everybody that's a trainer is not a good trainer, okay?
They might get a license, but they're not
good trainers.
When we were in camp, Harold, as you well know, we used to sit and analyze a lot of stuff together.
Right.
Meaning about this guy, that guy, what we're going to do to that guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, we helped a lot of fighters become champions.
Goal, and I respected you because we were sitting there, we were talking about when you had Frankie Randall fighting the killer.
Chavez.
And you said, how we can beat this guy. And I said, okay. And me and you, every day. I mean, it was every day and every night. We used to just talk and talk about it. And what was the strategy of this whole thing? And I was very proud of you, how you took this kid and really got this kid in the mindset and in conditioning to be prepared to know that he can beat this man. And that was undefeated at all these fights. And not just beat him, can drop him, can hurt him. That was the amazing part about it. And I said, you go on my book because of that situation. I said, man, this young man is going to be a real good trainer. And you were. You was a great trainer at that. And I'm glad they gave you your just too. So, being in that situation and understanding the skills of the sport is very hard for a lot of guys. That's to come today's time. You don't have these kids being very well equipped to be fighters. Let me give you guys one example that why the fighters today are not as good as yesterday. Look at every fighter that fights. Every one of them are flat-footed.
That you're absolutely correct.
Yeah.
They have
everyone
rhythm.
Is flat-footed. You ain't got one fighter that bounces off their toes and move.
And can punch on the go. That's why
and
Floyd
punch on the go.
Mayweather can.
He
that's
can't
why
even
Floyd
do it.
Can beat him up. No.
That's what I'm saying.
No.
And you cannot get much leverage off your punches if you don't balance yourself off your toes to get that strength in your punching power.
Well, Harold, fighters have a different mentality now. Back in the day, man, we know that guys were, when you fight, you're going to have to fight somebody. If you want to be great, you're going to have to fight somebody and whoop somebody.
Yeah,
and
well, you know.
You didn't mind fighting, right?
You got to understand, Stowell, and I got to say to the audience, greatness is gone. There's no more greatness no more. It's gone. Let me just say this. It's gone in every field that we have in sports and anything else. Everybody that has accomplished those great status that they have put out there, the stuff that they're putting out there now and trying to break these so-called records is imitation. Let's look at this. I'm going to give you a point of basketball. When Will Chamberlain made all them points and made the biggest point, he ain't had no three-point line to score.
You're correct.
All right, now they're giving guys these awards for scoring more points than Will Chamberlain because now they're shooting from a three-point line. Now, what are we talking about here?
You got that right. You got
Chamberlain couldn't make a foul shot either.
Right, he couldn't make a foul shot, but he made more points than everybody.
Sonny Hill, who I love dearly, who all of them grew up together. In Atlantic City at the Hall of Fame, me and Sonny was sitting beside each other. We were talking about old times and everything. And Sonny, I looked down at his handcuff. He said, 50. I said, Sonny, does that mean the 50 that's your average when you played in the NBA? He said, yeah, that was the 50. He said, let me tell you a little story. He said, when Wilt scored that 100-point game, he said he came back with the fellas. And so he was like all of us to be all over him. Like, yeah, man, you know, you scored 100 points a game. And Sonny said when he came back to the fellas, everybody just looked at each other and said, that's all you scored. because I was doing 50 myself. I was averaging 50. Everybody with us was high score. We knew Chamberlain was able to take over a game, and Sonny Hill said it's amazing he didn't have 200, 300 points because he could do it like that.
Right,
you know?
Right.
Yeah,
right.
And what you're saying, you know, half of these guys don't want to go nowhere, you know, put their show on the road,
go
in great gyms and boxing to spar with other great fighters that make you great when you're young. That's how you mature.
Yes.
You know what I mean? They don't
want
to go into training camps. You know what I mean? You know, you done been to Ollie's camp. You done been all over the cat.
I have had a blessing of a ride in the boxing world that anybody cannot even imagine, man. I mean, I have been in the ring with such great fighters, man, that, you know, man, he has over the years, you could not even believe the guys I have, you know, really boxed in my lifetime and been friends with in my lifetime. And boxing has really done a great deal for me to educate me, to make me disciplined, to know how to be a man, and know how to really take care of myself physically. And let me just say this. This boxing has helped me grow as a man to the point now. We all talk about weight, right? But it has helped me keep my health together. So I would not be able, I can control things and take care of myself as a man and a person until, you know, I'm 66 now and still up here acting like I'm 25. But at the same time, I know I'm 66. You know what I'm saying? When I do my sit-ups now, I do 10 at a time. I don't do 100 straight no more. You know, I count it up, 10 and do another 10. Everything is on a modern way. I'm a little smarter now, you know. Don't try to rush nothing no more.
And how you always dressed well, you know.
I gotta keep that. I gotta keep that together, brother. You know that. Gotta keep that together. I don't like these leotard type of suits they wear today. You know what I mean? It's just a little too tight for me. You know,
yeah,
just
a little too tight for me. Me too, bro. Well, what is it like? Gil Clancy, man, was second to none, one of the all-time great trainers in the sport. What was it like to be at Gil Clancy's present, to have him working with you, training you, and things like
you mean,
that?
You mean my second father. Me and my second father.
Yeah.
I mean, he was a great man. I mean, I just admired him greatly. Like, I loved him. I loved my father and everything, man. But him and Gil was, like, unbelievable because all you do, and what was so great about it, is just sit there and listen. You know what I'm saying? Don't ask no questions. Just listen, all right? And the things that he tells you and educates you about is just beyond belief. And I sit there at times and say, how the hell did he know something about? You know, we're talking about something that's going to happen 5 years later. And it does happen. You know, it's like, how the hell does he know that? And it blew my mind how knowledgeable and how creative this man was. And you know what was so crazy about it is that, I'm fighting, right? If I lose that round, right, he's coming up the stairs screaming and yelling, right, cursing, and I said, oh, God. And so, you know, I get this blast out of him and everything, and I just look at him. I said, okay, you can't say nothing. There ain't nothing to say. So you go, and I said, pull up these gloves, and I go out there, and, you know, I'm angry because I didn't got scolded in the corner. So I go out there and win the round and come back, and he said, all right, now do it again. And, he's got this flare up. So as long as you keep that flare up, that makes me fight more hard because I don't want to hear his mouth when I come back, you know. So those were the things that Gil had a strategy. So every fight, this was the thing. You look at a guy, here's King Kong. You know you're fighting King Kong, right? And I say, I hope you got a good, you know, in my mind I'm saying, I hope you got a good strategy for me to fight this guy. And he'll come and say, okay, this is what we're going to do in this fight. And he's always got a different technique of knowing how to do it. I never understood that until I got older. And I started understanding the way this whole thing go about having different ways how to fight guys when I go out there to fight. Because I'm not going to fight guys the same way. That's what I confuse everybody, because everybody's looking for me to do one thing. I might box on my toes one fight, or I might come to you in one fight, or I might just stand there and counter you at one fight. It just depends on how Will wants to arrange that fight to make the fight more easier for me to fight this guy. And that was the whole thing about it. He was a school teacher, and that's what he did. He was my teacher in boxing, where he was just so knowledgeable. I mean, just knowledgeable about how to fight a guy to make the fight more easy than what it should be.
Yeah.
And
I had
my big brother, Emil Griffin, too.
Emil Griffin.
Yeah.
Yeah, Emil Griffin was just an amazing person, number one. You know, I spent a lot of time with Emil Griffin, too. But what is it like to spar a guy Griffith, or all-time great like him?
Not fun, because you're getting your butt beat. But until you learn how to fight and can fight him, it becomes better. But it took me – I'm going to tell you the dime it took me. It took me – I started boxing at 9, so that means I got my butt beat from 9 years old till I was 24. That's when I got out the arm.
Okay. When you matured at 24, right?
Yeah, I understood this darn thing at 24. I mean, I understand what it is to be a fighter. I understand what the combination was. I understand where to place the punches. I understand. Before, I was just doing it. I didn't understand why I'm doing it. But then when I understood what I was doing it, then I said, oh, that's when I was in the military. And when I outboxed Griffin, when I came from the military, and Gil said this to me. We was in a bit. He said, all right, you and Griffin going to box. So I said, oh, God, I'm going to do my thing. I'm going to try what I've been, you know, I dreamed about, right? So I said, I come out there, and I started putting some combination together. And see, my hands were just going. Just things were just happening. Boom, boom, boom. And Griffin boxed to the third round. And Gil got so pissed off and said, Griffin, get the hell out the ring. And Griffin got out the ring and walked out. The round ain't over, Sterling. You know what I'm saying? Round ain't over. And so I'm saying, well, what happened? You know what I'm saying? I'm in a daze, because I'm trying to keep Griffin to beat me up. I'm trying to keep him off me. So I look at my father, and he said, good work. I said, yeah, but what happened? I mean, we were boxing, right? I finish up my workout, boom. The next day, come back, the gym is full with people, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then who's there? Right. Teddy Brenner and another assistant, right? And I said, wow, somebody must be from out of town. You know, is in town fighting at the guard, right?
In the gym.
Yeah,
right.
And so, Gil, I walk in. Griffin is sitting down with Gil. They're wrapping his hand, blah, 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 blah. And Gil say, go in and get undressed. You and Griffin going to box 6 rounds today. So I said, okay. So I'm looking around, all these people there and everything. I'm looking around. And my father, who never came in back to my dressing room, never came in the back, right? He comes back there, and he looked at me and had his hands folded. He said, how you feel? I said, I'm good. He said, you run this morning? I said, yeah. He said, you and Griffin going to fight 6 rounds. I said, okay, cool. He said, you all right?
Right.
I said, yeah. What's the deal? Nothing. You all right? Okay, good. I'm not thinking what this whole thing's about, right? Because I am box Griffin Chuck, 100 times, so what is the big thing, right? Man, I come out there, man, and Gil looking at me with some evil eyes. Griffin ain't talking to me. I mean, it's like saying, what the hell is going on?
Yeah.
Man,
right.
So Gil comes over to me. He says, you and Griffin are going at it for real. You're going 6 rounds. I said, okay, cool.
Yeah, you like you're going there and fight.
Right. I said, all right, cool. That's what it is.
They're going to check where you're at.
Right.
They're going to find out what he can do, what he can handle, what he can't handle. Come on.
Right, so they find out it was a fluke. So me and Griffin go at it, and I mean, we didn't hold one time, okay? I mean, we making so much move. But you got to say, I understood him now. I knew him now because I had boxed him. But it didn't click on me till that night, and I understand what he can do and what he can't do. And I adjusted myself to it to beat him at his own game. And when we were nailing each other, man. I was it was like an art. It was an art. And when the bell rang, man, at the sixth round, everybody in the gym started clapping. And I'm sitting there, I'm looking around saying, What's the purpose of all this? I mean,
you know how it is at the gym when you lay something down, bro.
I ain't expecting nothing because I've been boxing them all that years. Ain't nobody clapped before.
When you were getting your tail beat, right?
Right. Yeah. And then my father come over and look at me. He was smiling and everything. He said, "Good work, son. Good work. You know, yeah, all right." He said, "You know, don't do nothing else." I said, "I want to hit the heavy bag." "No, you ain't hitting nothing. You just go on and just shout." I said, "What's wrong with everybody? You know what I'm saying?" And then Gil came over and he said, "Good work, baby," and everything. He said, "You did real good." And then Teddy Brenner from the Garden at the time and Duke Savannah, they came over and they said, "You're looking good, little Hal." And they walked out. And that was it. You know, I'm not thinking that things have changed. You know, I had gotten a little bit. I didn't even know. You know what I'm saying? I was just going through the flow.
Uh-huh.
And then from that point on, you know, it was smooth sailing, man. And then that's when Gil starts throwing all those darn killers at me to fight. Rocky Man.
and bro, you was fighting them too, bro. What a game. I'm gonna ask you your opinion on something. The welterweights now, like Floyd Money Mayweather, Pacquiao, and them guys. In that era that you fought in, probably
don't do that to them. Don't do that to them.
Well, I got to do it. I got to do it, Jeff. Because the era of that era you came up with Mayweather's father, Sugar Ray Leonard, Tom
and you
Mayer,
know what? His father wasn't even in the ratings.
All right.
So that tells you the story how good he was.
Right.
I mean,
right.
You know, he had wins, but he wasn't even in the top. He wasn't even in the top 30.
Right. Right.
Okay.
But, you know, how would you think them guys would fare in that era? That was a tough era of boxing.
That's what I'm saying.
Top to bottom was
let me just give it to you.
We say stack like dirty laundry, and they was kicking a whole lot of tail.
right. I'm gonna put it the way they have described it, and I'm gonna keep Floyd Mayweather have his pride, okay? He wouldn't be in the top 20, okay? And when you're talking about world champions, when you talk from that era from 1950 to 1980, okay? He wouldn't even be in that era at all, okay? So since they got this new word as called the new millenniums or the new new group.
Yeah.
Let him be champion of that. He's not nowhere near champions because I can name off five guys right off the bat. I can name off 10. I can name off 20. But the family's gonna name you Jose Napoli. Okay, he wouldn't have beat Jose Napoli. He wouldn't have beat Curtis Coates. Okay, he wouldn't have beat Emil Griffin.
Curtis Coates was the bad boy down there in Texas.
Right. He wouldn't have beat Percy Pugh. He wouldn't have beat the guy that Emil Griffin killed. Let me just put it. He wouldn't have beat Sugar Ray Robinson. Okay. So the bottom line is that he wouldn't have been in that category with those guys because he wouldn't even be in the top 10 because the guys in the top 10 were so bad too. I mean,
we got 40 seconds and Hal, you did it again. You took over my show. You took over my show. We done ran out of time. You know, every time I'm with you, you just dominate my conversation, man.
Well,
you know?
Beautiful, yeah. It was great, Hal. Thank you. Yeah.
All right, well, I'm sorry I took over your show, but I mean, I guess it's just the same way that when I go anywhere, I just, you know, have my point of view, and it's a little long. But you got to understand this stuff. I'm 66 now. I got history.
We got
5 minutes.
We got
5 minutes. I got something to be proud of.
Well, I'd like to thank you for tuning in to the World Boxing Review Radio Show. I'm Aaron Stoa. They call me the Hall of Fame Trainer of Champions. Our radio aficionado, Bob Murray, and our very special guest, the Hall of Famer, Harold Weston Jr., man. Brother, thank you for coming on World Boxing Review. Tune in next week, 11 to 12, same time. Thank you.
Thank you, fellas.
Okay.
All right, take care.
You bet. Thank you.
All right.